Welcome to Amplified, the Hermes podcast channel, where we discuss the key issues, challenges, and trends shaping the investment landscape. I'm Amber Stevenson, Manager, Content at Hermes. Today, we'll discuss gender bias in the digital space. We'll hear from Christine Chow, Engagement Director at Hermes EOS, and Kimberly Lewis, Engagement Director at Hermes. Christine also had the opportunity to speak with Gulsa Korat, the Director of UNESCO's Division for Gender Equality. Gulsa has been with the organisation since 2004 and pioneered the move to make gender equality a global priority at UNESCO. An expert in international development, she has more than 25 years of field experience in over 30 countries throughout the world. Gulsa also oversaw the publication of the UNESCO report I'd Blush If I Could, which looks at how AI voice assistants perpetuate harmful gender biases. First of all, let's listen back to some of Christine and Gulsa's conversation about how gender bias is so prevalent in the digital world, particularly in the tech industry. Christine started off by asking about what we can do to tackle this.
In I'd Blush If I Could, you make some explicit comments and recommendations about what we can do to address this gender bias. For example, you argue that the world needs to pay much closer attention to how, when, and whether AI technologies are gendered, and crucially, who is gendering them. Could you elaborate on those comments? In particular, could you explain what a gender-responsive lesson plan is, and how we could improve design to discourage gender-based insults and abusive language?
Thank you, Christine, for this opportunity to have this conversation. Technology presents many opportunities, but there is significant bias in the algorithms used. This, as we indicate in the report, is in large part due to the fact that those who are creating the technologies are overwhelmingly men from similar backgrounds. When we look at the figures, we see that only 17.5% of the tech workforce worldwide are women, and they hold only 5% of leadership positions, a staggering figure in 2019. Our publication exposes the dangers of women not being involved in tech design and development. In particular, we look at the recent proliferation of digital voice assistants. In our research, we found that tech companies staffed predominantly by men have given women's voices, women's personalities, and even backstories to technology that basically turns on lights, sets the thermostat, changes the music, and places food orders. Not only are these assistants largely tolerant of sexual harassment and verbal abuse, they send disturbing messages about how women and girls should respond to sexual innuendo and even think about their bodies. Having more women in tech would be a first positive step to addressing complex questions about this gendering of the digital space. This is why at UNESCO, we advocate for women and girls to be confident and pursue their interests in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics careers. We have a range of initiatives, gender-responsive initiatives, to promote the equal participation of women and girls in developing and using technology for sustainable development. These initiatives range from creating role models of successful women in technology to working with governments to help them integrate a gender equality perspective in their policies and curricula. Gender-responsive digital skills curricula is one which is inclusive of the experiences of all learners and promotes equality between women and men. For instance, it actively inspires learners to search out and eradicate examples of gender bias in algorithms. Of course, teachers also need to be trained to use pedagogical approaches that build girls' and women's confidence in their tech skills. So these are some of the responses that we are using in our work.
That was Gulsa talking about the gender bias inherent in algorithms and consequently in digital products and workplaces. There were some really striking statistics in there. For example, the women hold only 5% of leadership roles in the tech industry. Christine also spoke to Gulsa about the ways in which the digital world can be exploited to abuse women, asking whether or not it can actually make women safer.
When introducing women to opportunities in the digital world, How can we strike a balance between protecting them from abuses and teaching them how to value data privacy and personal safety through exposure? What are the pros and cons of using social media to encourage women to be more technically savvy? And how can we create safe spaces effectively?
Well, we are seeing that technologies are increasingly being used to abuse women, for example, through online stalking, cyber violence, harassment, and sexual exploitation, as well as through new digital forms of domestic violence linked to the use of tracking devices, cameras, internet-controlled locks, and thermostats. Our research indicates that many parents restrict their daughters' engagement with technology, thinking that this will protect them from such abuse. But it's not that simple. Having strong digital skills actually enables women to be more safe, both online and offline, because they understand what's going on and can take steps to protect themselves. We promote quality media and information literacy programs at UNESCO, which equipped learners with the knowledge, attitudes, skills, and practice to access, analyze, and communicate different forms of information in ways that respect human rights and gender equality. Social media and other forms of online communication can be powerful tools to make women's voices heard. The HarassMap application enables women in Cairo and in Mumbai to report and geotag instances of harassment, while the online forum HolaBack provides a venue for women to share and discuss experiences of public harassment in 70 cities across 24 countries. In Iran, the social media movement #MyStealthyFreedom sparked a nationwide protest against forced wearing of the hijab, while the #MeToo movement that began in the USA spread across the world, calling attention to the prevalence of sexual assault. Images taken on mobile phones and distributed via social media have called attention to domestic violence in many countries. These examples show how local feminist activism can quickly coalesce into broad-based, high-speed, and high-impact social and political movements through the use of social media.
So that was Christine talking to Gulsa about some of the issues surrounding gender bias in tech. Back in the office, I also spent some time chatting to Christine and Kim about the issue. Christine and Kim, thank you for joining me today. So let's start with you, Christine. Do you have any thoughts on gender bias in business?
Yes, thank you. I want to expand what Gulsa was talking about in terms of understanding what biases there might be in the systems. So first, there is a human bias that we talked about quite a lot, and we come across that in news as well. For example, gender biases in hiring. It describes situations when we have attitudes towards people or associate stereotypes with them without our conscious knowledge, such as certain use of languages or expectations of the types of characteristics that should be displayed by an ideal candidate in hiring. To address this issue, attention should be paid to system design and data collection practices, supervised learning methods, and model application. Human biases could give rise to model bias because AI systems are designed by engineers and data scientists, and they design the target outcome to the model, select features to be included and excluded. So they designed and included certain types of idealistic stereotype that they have in mind. Another type of bias occurs when there is bias in data. It occurs when the underlying data itself carries bias because it uses a non-representative data from a sample size that is not representative of the population we're trying to measure. I'll give you an example. Say, if we're trying to measure the characteristics of population of the UK in the 21st century, but if we use the data back in the 16th century, then obviously the age group, the gender, the ethnicity will be different from what we're trying to measure today. So when selecting data, we need to make sure that that sample size that we're trying to measure actually matches what we have on hand or the problem that we're trying to solve as well. A recent case is related to a consumer electronics company that partnered with a financial institution to launch a credit card. It was reported that a couple with a shared income, the men actually have a much higher credit limit than the wife. And apparently this is due to limited personal credit history. For example, maybe the female partner hasn't worked for a period of time and it doesn't have her own income history. So this is where alternative data comes in to fill the gap, for example, and careful attention must be paid to the model design. And it is also possible to add gender specifically back to credit scoring. And recently, there's an academic paper by the University of Edinburgh that talks about the impact of specifically adding back gender to adjust such data bias that already exists.
Thank you, Christine. That's really interesting. So as you highlight, we clearly need to determine how gender bias comes about in order to successfully tackle it. So now turning it back to you, Kim, could you talk a little bit more about some of the statistics also mentioned about the number of women in leadership roles?
Yes, thank you. And unfortunately, they are a bit bleak. The higher up in the company you go in the hierarchy, the fewer women there are, with women accounting for only 6% of CEOs of the top 100 tech companies. This is known, as Alka mentioned, as the leaky pipeline. It's also worth noting that there are no Black or Latino women CEOs of Fortune 500 tech companies. In the US, women who do enter the digital sector tend to leave it at twice the rate of men on average. Women are also more likely than men to cite gender bias, discrimination, and harassment as their reasons for leaving the field. We have seen tech employees become increasingly vocal on these issues. For example, some employees of a large tech company staged walkouts across the globe in 2018 to demand an end to inequality of pay and opportunity while asking for greater transparency about sexual harassment. Why is this important to us as investors, some may ask? Well, in multiple sectors, including the tech sector, there is a positive correlation between higher levels of employee diversity in senior leadership and stronger financial performance. The tech industry is no different. And it's estimated that reaching gender parity in the U.S. tech sector could add up to $390 billion in enterprise value.
Thanks very much, Kim. So following on from this, Gulsa also spoke to us about how language can be an important tool in creating more inclusive environments. Let's hear what she had to say.
Language matters. The Technology Equality Together initiative, as well as some agencies, have developed tools that aimed at promoting equality in vacancy announcements. In addition to using gender-neutral pronouns, such as they advise using terms such as committed, interpersonal, support, cooperation, which are seen as more female-gendered rather than words such as decision, analysis, determined, and objective, which are seen as more male-gendered. Employers can use a gender bias decoder, such as those that are already in existence in the marketplace, that help in identifying gendered words in emails, job descriptions, and other texts. Of course, tech companies also need to ensure that their recruitment panels are gender balanced and that recruits have had training on unconscious bias. At UNESCO, when we made gender equality one of our two global priorities, we also passed a decision which said that all panels, recruitment, promotion, and the like, they should all be gender balanced. And if they are not, the process stops and restarts again. So we need to help tech companies to consider how their workplace policies and practices respond to the needs of all genders. Finally, it may be helpful for firms to consider how they can mobilize men to promote gender equality in technology, such as through ensuring that men have experiences with female bosses, mentors, and leaders, and giving them a specific role in gender diversity efforts.
That was Gulsa talking about practical ways in which companies can help promote gender equality. Kim, in your experience of engaging with companies, are there any other steps that firms can take to create more diverse workplaces?
Yes, absolutely. We think that all firms should really take two steps. The first is to assess where they are currently. And that involves collecting robust diversity data. Different countries have different regulations around what is required. Some are very stringent and companies do this as a matter of course. And in the ones that they are not required to sort of statutorily, we urge them to do that voluntarily. Once they know where they are, they can then assess where they want to go. So after having robust data about the gender diversity within the organization and where in the organization their employee sits, we encourage them to make targets for where they'd like to be and specific dates by which they'd like to be there. So that's the beginning of a plan. And the second part of this is to make sure that they have developed a clear strategy for developing their talent in lines with their targets. And that means expanding the initial pipeline of talent by supporting STEM education whilst focusing on diversity and inclusion at every level throughout the organizations. Companies should seek to resolve barriers to inclusion, supporting women in their careers through mentoring, and addressing overt and covert discrimination and harassment to avoid losing talent. This will help companies plug the leaky pipeline and build equal representation.
Yeah, I just want to add to that as well. We have seen many companies having mentorship, female mentorship programs to address these issues, which are great. But at the end of the day, having sponsorship, clear sponsorship all the way to the top to executive management is what is needed, because we're seeing some companies also having wishy-washy. Everyone has a mentor, but what does it actually mean? How is it going to advance my career? Show me something concrete. We would like to see something as concrete as that.
Thanks very much, both. That was really interesting. So as we've heard, there are clearly a number of things that companies can do to improve inclusivity. And as you've highlighted, one good place to start is the very top. So let's move on now and hear what Gulsa has to say about diversity on the boards of tech companies.
I mentioned earlier that in the technology industry, only 17.5% of the workforce are women. And in the C-suite, the percentage goes down to 5%. I don't have the exact numbers for the boards, but I suspect that it would be similar to the C-suite because it's usually a reflection of the profile of the C-suite. It's really very important that companies, especially those in the AI business, in the technology sector, have more diverse boards, not only in terms of gender, but also in terms of other factors of diversity, including disciplines. Because when we look at the boards today, what we see is very specific profiles, people with legal backgrounds, as you mentioned, people with finance backgrounds, with oversight backgrounds. But we don't see many people with soft skills, what I would call soft skills, which are very important in debates, in discussions, conversations about AI, because they also include social issues, ethical issues, social issues that include gender and other diversity factors. But because these are not typically traits or specialization areas that are searched for by the boards or search firms that help boards, these people are not nominated. I think the future of the debate, the conversation on frontier technologies and AI should include more diverse voices, and that can start with having more women on the boards of technology companies.
That was Gulsa giving us her experience on the lack of diversity on corporate boards, both in terms of gender and experience. So Christine and Kim, what are your thoughts? Have there been any indications that the tide has started to turn and more companies are making a concerted effort to improve the diversity of their boards?
Well, we are seeing some good news on the board gender diversity front. Recent statistics demonstrate that boards are becoming more diverse. For example, 26% of S&P 500 directors are women, up from 24% in 2018, and 16% 10 years ago. And more boards, 92% of the S&P 500 now include two or more women. Also, another milestone was finally achieved in mid-2019, when for the first time, all of the S&P 500 companies had to have at least one female director. I do want to point out, though, that while gender diversity has improved, some challenges do remain in other forms of diversity.
I would agree with that. And to bring out Gulsa's point as well, what we actually need is cognitive diversity that sit alongside other types of diversity, because this is what matters. It's what are the different ways of thinking? Have we considered the different viewpoints and different thought processes? So I'll give an example. I have been on an interview process before where the female candidate was given a case study. She put forward her conclusions and she highlights the areas where she has doubts because of the limited information that she was given to conduct a case study. And at the interview panel, I was the only woman. And it turned out that the men think that she wasn't confident enough. Whereas from my viewpoint, she was being very careful in considering whether she was making her comments on solid grounds and highlight areas where she has uncertainty. And in fact, I actually managed to change the viewpoints of the whole panel by explaining that and by providing evidence that this is how she demonstrates her confidence and her analytical capability. So it is about different ways of thinking and understand why certain people make certain decisions and putting different suggestions forward. So on that, I want to highlight that in our engagement, we also engage on board gender diversity. And in November 2019, we published a case study of a tech company. This company was listed in 2004, and it was only in August 2019 that they appointed the first female director on board. And we hope that by giving this as an example, we can push more diversity on boards of all tech companies that might be needing that change. Also, to introduce more diversity, genuine diversity and inclusion on board, I think that more transparency is needed in terms of what the board committees are actually doing. So we engage on boards and we encourage them to not only have a published charter or terms of reference, but actually have work plans and targets for each board committee so we understand we can better engage on what is the contribution of each director. How are they contributing their skills?
Thanks very much, Christine. And thank you to both of you for what was a really interesting discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Christine and Kim discussing the different ways that we can improve corporate diversity. We're now back in the studio. Let's finish off by hearing what Christine and Gulsa had to say about how eliminating gender bias can help support the Sustainable Development Goals.
The report links the Digital Literacy Framework with Sustainable Development Goals of the UN 4 and 5, which target quality education and gender equality, respectively. There are numerous examples in the report, from the European Union and Latin America to India and Kenya. Can you share with us your vision for how closing the digital gap can support sustainable development and how it may differ in different countries?
Well, digital skills are really essential today for people's economic, social, and political interests, as well as for their physical and psychological safety. For example, digital skills foster access to data and government policies. They facilitate political activism. They can also allow us to share information easily and to react rapidly on issues that affect everyone. To give you an example, a group of Kenyan teenage girls who call themselves the Restorers have developed a successful application that provides the victims of female genital mutilation with resources and also features a panic button for risky situations. Having a wide range of digital skills also allows people, and women in particular, to protect themselves from cyber harassment and sexual exploitation. According to one of our reports in 2015, 73% of women have been exposed to or experience some form of violence online, with women aged 18 to 24 being at particular risk. Digital skills help protect against this. Closing the gender gap will also benefit the digital industry and hence the economy. Indeed, including more skilled women in the labor force of digital companies will increase their success in the marketplace through the benefits of diversity, expanding the innovation and relevance of their products.
That was Gulsa talking about how ending the gender gap could have far-reaching consequences both for companies and the economy. So as we've heard, gender bias is still shockingly prevalent in the digital space. But as Christine and Kim showed us, companies are increasingly taking action to ensure their workplaces are more balanced. At Hermes, we believe that diverse workplaces have the potential to create more vibrant, dynamic companies. And our stewardship arm, Hermes EOS, will continue to engage with companies on issues relating to gender equality. I'd like to thank Gulsa, Christine and Kim for joining me for the discussion. Until next time, I'm Amber Stevenson. Thank you for listening to Amplified.
Thank you for listening to the Hermes podcast. If you found it interesting and would like to listen to more podcasts by Hermes, please visit our website, hermes-investment.com, and search for podcasts. These podcasts are for information purposes only, and the views, information, or opinions expressed therein are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Hermes Investment Management and its employees. Performance should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. All the performance represented is historical. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future results, and investors may not recover the full amount invested.